Hello and welcome to You Really Shouldn't Have, with me, James Warwick. The podcast where each week I sit down with a different guest as we discuss their career, along with the story of the worst gift they've ever been given. Joining me on this week's show is content creator and podcaster Bianca Warwick. Bianca stopped by to teach me all about imposter syndrome, which is the subject of her very successful podcast, Please Don't Kick Me Out. Alongside that, we discussed her career in marketing, life as a military spouse, and of course, she let me in on the worst gift she's ever been given. So Bianca, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
I am absolutely so excited because I had a friend of mine on and I loved his episodes. So I was so honored to come on. So I'm excited.
It's interesting you mentioned that, your friend obviously being Mike Valdez, who was on a couple of months back, because actually there's a question near the end that I ask everybody now off the back of Mike's interview, but I'll let you know more about that when we get to it. But there's actually a new question that was inspired by a conversation that me and him had during his interview, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's cracking me up that I didn't realize your last name is literally almost my last name.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
I just saw James, I didn't even, but yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's so funny. We are literally like two syllables, two letters apart.
Yeah, we'll keep the surnames out of it because otherwise it's going to get really, really confusing. But Bianca, if we go right back to the beginning and we go back to sort of young Bianca growing up, what was early life like and what would young Bianca say if she knew what you were doing now?
Oh my goodness. I think that I'd be pretty stoked on myself. So I, for your listeners, I'm a content creator. I'm a podcaster. I've been a podcaster for the last year. My former career pre-corona done, take my job. Just like many people got laid off in the pandemic. So I started podcasting and my podcast is about imposter syndrome. So little young me would be looking at me actually living my best life authentically and everyone liking me because I didn't fit in growing up. I was a weirdo. I'm still a weirdo. And now I get paid to do it. So I don't know. I think I'd be proud of myself because I found someone. Like, my whole goal in life was to find the right person. I found my soulmate. He's my best friend. And he's always seen me for me. I haven't had to bend who I am. And I've been able to be seen by him and loved by him and accept love from him. And so I think that has been really helpful to have that safe relationship where your partner is very much a champion of whatever you're doing. So like, he's deployed right now on a tin can somewhere in the middle of the ocean, but he will, like, when he goes to port calls, he'll download all my episodes and listen to them. And he's just really, really proud of me. And I'm proud of me because I did something and I stuck to it. And I mean, who knows where it's going to go, but I think I'd be proud of myself for sure.
You touched on it briefly there. Prior to the COVID pandemic, you had a successful career in marketing. I just wondered how you got into that field initially.
Well, I was a marketing director of a branch of a Fortune 500 company in the real estate sector in San Diego. And I went to college. I wanted to be an art major, but that was too difficult. Imposter syndrome. And then I switched to communications, thought I wanted to be a radio DJ. Couldn't really get into the broadcast classes. And then I also saw that like being a radio DJ doesn't really pay the bills. And if I was to get a job in being in broadcasting and in radio, which is what I wanted to do, I really wouldn't have been able to get the right job. So I have a friend that works in radio and she literally has like had to live in really, really crappy towns all over Colorado where I'm originally from and do like the morning 5 a.m. traffic jam and stuff. And so like, it doesn't make very much money. So it's like, I kind of knew that story of it. So I was like, maybe I'll do advertising and marketing. Cause my sister was in advertising and marketing. So I graduated in 2010 from college. One semester early, I really didn't like staying with my parents during the summer. So I would do summer school every summer during university. And so I graduated with exactly 120 credits and I graduated a semester early and I was like, sweet. Thought I wanted to intern abroad afterwards, but that didn't really work out. I ended up meeting a guy and then I was like, I guess I'll move to Denver. So I dated this guy for 2 years, but I interned quite a few times and I had a goal of I really loved dance music, like electronic dance music. At the time it was huge. And, it was 2010, 2011. And I had an internship right next to Beatport, beatport.com. And beatport.com had a club. Beatport is the authority. So if you're a DJ, you can go and you can basically down like synths and tracks and stuff. It's really good for mixing. But anyway, my internship was next to Beatport. And on Fridays, our office and their office, what they would do like a happy hour, and we would, you know, cross promote kind of, you know, the advertising agency I was interning at would go over there and I would vice versa, and there'd be DJs. It was really cool. And I met this guy and his name's Sean. He was a great mentor. He basically, I said, I really love writing because like that's my favorite thing. I love writing and I love writing about music. I thought maybe I wanted to do that, like maybe be a journalist like that way. And he was like, the best advice I've ever been given, he was like, just keep writing and keep doing it and keep grinding. And eventually you will get what you need. So I started writing and I was interning, but then, you know, still dating this guy, still writing about music. I got to go to festivals. And this was at the time when people who wrote about music didn't get paid for it. Unfortunately, now you can, but I wasn't. And there was a job that opened up for a house music manager, like a person that would deal with like that discogs of all of their house music and basically be the product manager of that department, because there's so many different sects of music. And so I interviewed and I made it all the way to the final round, and they took someone in Berlin and I didn't get the job and I was bummed. And I thought that was my dream, right, James? I thought that was my dream. I ended up catching the eye of a popular advertising agency in Denver, and I ended up getting the internship, the social media internship, again, not being paid, interning. I broke up with that boyfriend and I moved back in with my parents, and I was like, I don't want to live with my parents. Oh no. You know, still looking for a job, wanted to live back in Denver because I love Denver. I really thought Denver was where I want to stay forever because I'm very much mile high till I die, like 5280, which is exactly how, which is how long a mile is. And I'm a huge Broncos fan. I'm a huge Rockies fan. I'm a huge Avalanche fan, all sorts of the sports in Colorado. And I lived there since I was 10. So I always thought that Denver was going to be the place for me forever. So I ended up taking another promotional marketing tour. This one's funny. Are you ready for this one?
Oh, I'm ready.
My friend's in the South, and she's on the Coca-Cola happiness tour. And she's like, hey, do you have any jobs like right now? And I was like, no. And she's like, well, how about we fly you out and you can help me run this tour through Louisiana? I'm like, okay. And Atlanta. So she picks me up in Atlanta, Georgia. And the concept of the Coca-Cola happiness tour was you were basically, people had to exercise for Coke samples, and it's the South.
Okay.
Where if you're a frame of reference, if you know, there's a lot of big people.
For sure.
I will never forget making people hula hoop for a sample of warm Coca-Cola. It's burned in my brain forever, but that was a really great gig. I also did production assistance for Kitchen Nightmares, got that job through Tinder. It was this assistant was looking for PAs, which I don't know. I didn't sleep with him, obviously. So I have no idea. So I got to meet Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He made me very uncomfortable. I mentioned it a few times. He's like, I'm really bad with British accents, but there was a guy and I was in the back doing dishes. Cause when you're a PA, when you're a production assistant, you do everything they ask you to do. And most of my job was sitting in front of, in this tiny town in Colorado, sitting in front of his trailer and making sure no one bugged him. That was my job.
So you were Gordon security.
I sat in the sun for 8 hours a day, and then I was basically the only somewhat attractive person that was a PA with this other guy. And we're out there, you know, doing dishes. And at the time, the Daft Punk's Get Lucky was like stuck in his head. So he kept like singing it to coming it to himself, you know. And Gordon Ramsay comes in and he's like, doesn't he look like he's part of the Bee Gees? He's a really nice guy. A lot of it's fodder for show. He does get hot headed and he has yelled at me before and I did cry.
Oh, wow.
He yelled at me because I was trying to get his attention so that he could sign some stuff for kids. Cause he loves, this is going to sound creepy, but he loves children. He has quite a few children. He's very popular on TikTok. His daughter is, at least with him. Cause she does like dances with him and stuff.
He did like a kid's version of MasterChef as well.
Yeah. So, yeah. He does really care about children and the youth and in a good way, in a wholehearted way, and teaching children to cook. I think that's really, really good. So regardless, nice guy. So I did that. And then I ended up working I ended up getting hired at a marketing firm where it was a startup. And then I didn't like that I was working in Boulder, Colorado, which is just outside of where my parents live. And I was still living with my parents. And I was like, ew, I hate it. This is the whole summer of my summer of 2013 or whatever. And so I ended up getting a job at this place called Fruition. And I was sort of almost coming out of the startup phase, but it was still kind of a startup. I was their social media coordinator and then social media manager and then social media director. And I rage quit that job in 2017, went on an Eat, Pray, Love solo trip to Chicago to see if I wanted to move there. I thought I was done with Denver. met my husband a month later.
Oh, wow. I know you were a military spouse, and I wondered how you found that during this pandemic period. And also, you're in the process of relocating, right?
You know, honestly, I'm grateful that I got laid off in a lot of ways. One, it gave me time with my husband before he deployed. Two, I was able to lean into my military community when I needed it. And three, I now know I never want him to go on another deployment and I will straight up divorce him. Just kidding. No, we've been together for 4 years. We matched on Tinder December 28th, 2016. And then I ghosted him because he invited me to a bar. And I said, no, I will not. And then 2 months later, he found me on OkCupid and said, what are the odds? And the odds are very high that you will find the same people on all of the apps all of the time. So he didn't know that, but he's like, and I was like, you have my phone number. He's like, oh yeah, what is it again? I'm new here. I was like, you deleted my phone number. Okay, cool. So I gave him my phone number. He took me on a date. I gave him my address, which I never do because I was like, well, if he murders me, someone will find me. So being a military spouse, when we met, we were in a landlocked state. So Colorado is a landlocked state and he's a Navy guy. Like that doesn't make sense. He had a joke that he would always say, oh yeah, I'm working for an underground sub base that like pops out to the Pacific Ocean and people believed him because they're stupid. So, you know, he just makes jokes like that. He also has a joke that like the Navy is the first place he's ever had to wear a shirt for a job. And that's because he used to be a lifeguard at Knott's Berry Farm and a city lifeguard. And he used to play water polo. So he's been in for 15 years. But he was enlisted prior. So he's technically what we would refer to as a Mustang. And the terminology of a Mustang means that you have a spirit that can't be broken because you went from enlisted to officer or enlisted to, you know, it's a very weird world that I wasn't prepared for. I didn't really know what I didn't know. All I knew was that I loved this man. So I loved him and I wanted to be with him and it didn't matter to me. And thankfully he had never been married before. No kids, doesn't care that I don't want kids. Big dog lover, huge goofball, just a great, 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 great guy. And that's kind of people that are in the Navy. They're kind of goofballs and they're huge nerds. And he's very much a nerd. So I've been with him for 4 years and we moved to San Diego 2 years ago. It's been a journey. You know, I think that the military didn't really know what was going on. We didn't really know what was going on. My husband was gone when the world shut down. He came back to no toilet paper. He was like, what's happening? And then they involuntarily recalled him and sent them back out. And like they had to do the sequestering of the COVID bubble. My husband has been gone since September 14th, 2020, but he wasn't technically gone. They did like a 3-week stay in a hotel because they're trying to like cure COVID or whatever. And I don't know. Like the Navy doesn't really know what it's doing right now. I don't know what I'm doing right now.
And I don't think any of us know what we're doing right now, to be honest.
I mean, who's to say that we're starting to, you know, unlock things and it doesn't surge again. The only reason why the vaccine is good though, is because it's starting to help alleviate hospital beds so that our first and frontline workers can actually have a day off for once.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So being a military spouse is weird, but also right now, the thing that annoys me is when people try to like tell me like, well, my husband's been deployed this many times and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't a pan deployment, Karen. Like this is a pan deployment. Like it's so much different. Like you don't know what's going on. And so my husband has basically been gone for all of the changes and the ebbs and the flows. And we also had a really, really horrible accident that happened with our command where 10 people died. And it was the worst 72 hours of my life, not knowing if he was involved.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So when people tell me that they don't understand it, I'm like, that shouldn't have happened. That was horrible. So when you're asking me like, how has it been? I definitely was not, I think that when we were at shore command, it didn't really make sense because when you're on shore duty and you're not on sea duty and shore duty are two different things. Sea duty is awful. Would not suggest, 0 out of 10. Don't like it. My husband said that this deployment has been more difficult, not just because of the pandemic, but because he's married now. And so he would rather be home with me. And when he was single and was going on deployments, he was like, meh, whatever. Plus they had port calls. There has been no port calls. They finally had one in Guam where if you were vaccinated, you were allowed to go around the pier. So he ended up being able to get lunch with my friend's husband who's stationed out there, Daniel. And it was so great to see a photo of them. And gosh, he looks so happy. And I was so happy because a lot of this deployment has been depressing for both the spouse and the military service member. And the holidays were really hard, more hard than normal, I think, because a lot of us couldn't get together, but more so when your partner's gone over the holidays and it's a pandemic, you're around people. Like I spent Thanksgiving with some friends, you're around people, but it doesn't feel the same. It's not the same as when you're with someone you care about.
So you're moving imminently. You're relocating.
Oh God,
imminently.
No. Okay. Oh, right. So get this. Okay. So he comes back at the end of May, not breaking OPSEC by not telling you the date. So it's the end of May. So then we have 20 days from that to basically get the cars shipped out. So we have to, Hawaii is like a whole mess. The dog is a whole other thing. I had to get the dog ready to go to Hawaii because Hawaii hates two things, snakes and rabies.
Oh.
And COVID is the third now. So you have to go through a really rigorous process to get the dog ready to go. My dog's one. He's a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, so he'll have no problem. He'll fly in cabin. It'll be fine. But there's only specific airlines that allow them to fly in cabin. So it's like, it's a whole, they just make it hard. And people say, are you excited for Hawaii? I say, yeah, I am excited for Hawaii, but like, let me get there first because like, there's so much going on.
I wanted to touch on your guys' wedding because I know you got married in Vegas.
Yes.
And there's a lot of things in the UK, Bianca, that people in the US will say, well, do you have that in the UK? And I say, well, we have something similar, but it's called this, or yes, we have the same thing. Mm-hmm. But the Elvis wedding in Vegas, there is nothing I can compare it to. And I'm intrigued by the whole thing.
Oh my goodness. Okay. It was my dream wedding. So I had non-negotiables when I was dating, and dating is mostly trash. I don't, 0 out of 10, don't suggest it for your listeners. It's terrible. But I basically was finding that a lot of guys I would be dating really wanted a wedding. And my parents always said, we'll give you money, just elope, right? Like, we don't want to be involved in it. It's your day. Go elope, go elope, go elope. So we were courthouse married, but on the anniversary of our first date, which is the 10th of February, we got married by an Elvis. And I told him my first date before I even met him, I was like, here's all of my dirty laundry and things you might not like about me. And he was like, I love all those things. And I was like, I want to be married by an Elvis. And he was like, that's hilarious. Let's do it. I wanted fat Elvis. So did he. Instead, we got cocaine, probably actually on cocaine Elvis. And his butt was out, unclipped in show pants. And it was a whirlwind. We said we had vows. He just stumbled over them. At one point, he almost stabbed my eyeball with these Elvis glasses that they forced on my head. Then I had to take photos in these glasses. And so in Las Vegas, and we were at a little white chapel in Las Vegas. You can, if you're a military member and you wear your military like dress uniform, which is the classic Navy whites, very, very, very handsome. Plus you have the sword, which he insisted on taking. That's another story.
Oh, why not? I mean, if you've got a sword, use it.
I'll tell you the story in a sec about that, but oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Ugh. But anyway, he looks great. And I had my dream wedding. I had my dream dress. I had my in-laws there. I was really grateful they were there. My in-laws are great. I love them. Yeah, I'm not friends with any of the people that went besides my best friend, Marcy, who was my photographer. And it was such a trip. It was like 10 minutes. And it was like, I think I blacked out because it was like my dream. And I was like crying, you know, I was like, when I met Elvis, I cried. I knew it wasn't Elvis, but I was like, this is my dream. And like, Elvis was like, yeah, sure, dude. Like there's so many weddings, like comes in with his little portable, you know, his little portable thing. And he's like, he sang songs I didn't know. Like he kept being like teddy bear. And oh my God, it was just weird. So they gave us a limo. So with, if you wear your service member uniform and you get your wedding done, as long as you sign away your rights for marketing and let them use your photos, you just have to pay the difference on the Elvis.
Oh, nice.
So it was like $300. We're like, done deal. They're like, also flowers are included. They were shitty filler flowers. They were horrible. So, do not suggest 0 out of 10. And, so anyway, they also had a limo and they pick you up from the airport and all that, 'cause you're military. So they picked us up from the airport. They picked us up from the hotel and then they picked us up to go to the wedding the following day. And on the way back, we said, well, I had this vision of a photo that I wanted. Classic photo. I'll send it to you after this so you can see it. But this classic photo, we're on Fremont Street because it was, the sun was starting to set, so the lights were turning on, which is classic Vegas, like lights and really flashy.
Yeah.
So we went down to Fremont Street, and here's where the sword comes in. A security officer asked my husband if we were impersonating a military married couple.
Brilliant.
And then said that they, he was like, and also, is that a lot? Are you allowed to have a weapon? And Scott was like, sir, I am a commissioned officer of the Navy. This is part of my uniform.
To which the security guy said not much.
To which the security guy said, I got to call backup. So he calls backup. He's like, this man is saying that this is, and the guy was like, dude, I was a military person for like years. Yeah, there's a sword with the formal. Oh, by the way, congratulations. This is embarrassing. We're sorry. But I got the photo I wanted, which is similar to the KISS statue. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes.
It's a classic baby thing. Come to find out that it's very rapey, but, you know, it's very classic. And I had this basic image in my head of what I wanted. And I ended up getting that classic photo in front of all of this beautiful, I want to say it was the Four Queens Resort that has like all these beautiful things. So we went up and down Fremont, and my friend Marcy is an amazing photographer, and I got like every photo that I wanted. So absolutely, it was my dream wedding. Absolutely, it was executed in the way that I want. I wouldn't change a thing about it. I got married by an Elvis, and I have a Lilo and Stitch tattoo of Lilo and Stitch Elvis because my husband talks to me in a Stitch voice all the time, and it got really annoying at first. Now it's endearing. I always laugh at him, but I also love Lilo and Stitch. I'm a huge Disney fan. So yeah, I mean, overall, if your listeners are thinking about getting married by an Elvis, just strap in. It's a hoop. It's like 10 minutes of your life you might never get back, but you'll never forget it.
So we've reached the part of the show where I have to ask you, what is the worst gift you've ever been given?
Okay. So I talked to Mike about this because I couldn't decide. I was like, is the worst gift I was given the time that someone gave me a Beanie Baby that I had already? Was the worst gift this? And then it occurred to me, when I was on Mike's podcast, I talk about something ad nauseum. So growing up, you weren't cool unless you had an American Girl doll. Now, what do you ask is an American Girl doll? They are the hottest thing for girls. It's the catalogs would come to our house, and I would always look at them, and I wanted one. And my mom was like, I'm going to make this a learning opportunity. So American Girl dolls, you could get two different types. You can get one that looked just like you. My mom's like, I'm not spending that money. Absolutely not. Or you can get one that has a book series and it's all encouraged. And she has like all sorts of different looks and they go with different books. And so my mom was like, I'm going to make you read every single American Girl doll book. And I have ADHD undiagnosed at the time. And that was very, very hard for me. It took me about a year to read every single book, but I was actually pretty good at reading. But you know, when you have ADHD, I'm like squirrel. So it was really, really difficult. My mom's like, if you read every book and, you know, like read all the books and then you can decide which doll you want, we'll get you a doll for your birthday. I'm like, sweet, this is going to work out. I'm going to be so cool with my American Girl doll. Awesome. So I'm reading all the books and I decide on Kirsten because I had blonde hair and Kirsten was also a Swedish, I think she was Swedish or Norwegian immigrant who came to America and I don't remember anything else about her other than that her every doll has an accessory and her accessory is a spoon. she's also been discontinued. I don't know why, but her story is not very interesting. So now that I think about it, I can't remember anything else besides the fact that she has a spoon. Anyway, I asked, so I say, I want Kirsten. My mom and dad are like, great. Ordered me Kirsten for my birthday. I forgot that dolls are creepy. So I did all of this work and I'm terrified of this doll. And so, yeah, I mean, it was, and I told my mom this, I was actually telling my mom yesterday, I told her the story and she's like, I told her I was gonna be on a podcast. She doesn't understand, my mom's, you know, in her 60s, she doesn't understand technology and anything, but she's really good with an iPhone 4. Not sure how that's still working, but she's funny. And so I'm telling her, I was like, I'm gonna be on this podcast and they're gonna ask me about what's my worst gift. And I told her, I was like, hey, remember the time you made me read all of the American Girl doll books and then you got me the American Girl doll and then I was afraid of her and I kept her in my closet? My mom's like, yes. I was like, I'm sorry. That was really expensive. I am so sorry. And I was like, well, anyway, can you keep her? Because she's now probably worth a lot of money because she's discontinued.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
She's completely mint condition. She has all of the outfits. I'm going to go on Antique Roadshow. I'll tell you what, 20 years from now, I'm calling it. I'm going on Antique Roadshow and take Kirsten the doll and see if I can get some money.
Once you get on Antiques Roadshow, you'll be cashing in.
Oh, hopefully. And then they'll be like, do you want to keep it? I'll be like, take it. It's creepy.
Yeah, take the money. I wanted to move on to imposter syndrome, Bianca, main event as to why we're here. I found out a lot during my research for doing this interview because I'd heard of imposter syndrome, but for whatever reason, and I can't tell you why, I had always sort of pigeonholed it to be exclusive to the workplace, if that makes sense. So I only ever sort of thought of imposter syndrome as being linked to being found out that you are not good enough to do your job, but not linked to sort of your personal life and everything else.
Right, right. You know, actually, that's kind of how I saw it at first. At first, I thought it was only a woman thing because, like, my women friends would be vulnerable with me. Like, you know, you have a couple beers with the mates, and then you're like, oh, like, when are they, you know, they're going to find out that I'm bad at my job, you know? That is that feeling of, like, also not being able to accept your accomplishments. So being a marketing director, having that 10 years of experience, and still I would feel imposter syndrome even though I knew my stuff because I was like, well, are they going to find out that I really have no idea what I'm doing? Which is so normal. So I ask a series of questions on my podcast that get to the heart of the problem. We talk about failures, successes, and I have people define success. I have them define imposter syndrome. And I've had all sorts of different stories around the world because it affects everyone in a different way. So I first thought it was just a woman thing. And you know, when you start a podcast, you're begging your friends to be on the podcast and it's like herding cats. And then you start getting some wheels behind you and then you keep getting cooler and cooler and more interesting guests. So imposter syndrome, I thought maybe would just be a woman thing. And then I was like, well, maybe it's women and queer people. I was like, maybe it's women, queer people and minorities. And now I'm like, it's everyone.
Yeah.
It's everyone. And how you can combat it is doing things that are more authentic to yourself. So for instance, I feel it less as a podcaster than I did as a marketing director. I felt imposter syndrome every single day. And it's also the feeling of like walking into a room and the words imposter syndrome, they feel heavy and they feel weird. So when you say that, it's they're very heavy words, imposter syndrome. It's not something that's in the psychological handbook. It's just a phenomenon that somewhat us as humans with these societal constructs have just kind of given ourselves over time. So usually how I combat it is authenticity, definitely, but I also walk myself through the worst possible scenario. And then I like come to terms with what the worst possible scenario was. And I play it on a loop in my head. And then I go, okay, well, we're going to do it anyway. And we'll see what happens. Like it's the matter of getting out of your own way to succeed. And it's just, it's something that's more, it's basically, you know, it's one part self-esteem, one part anxiety, and everyone feels it. And it's normal. So that's what my podcast is about. I didn't see a podcast that talked about this. In fact, it came to me like kind of in a fever dream. Like I didn't know what I wanted a podcast about. I always wanted to be on podcasts, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And so it's amazing now to be able to talk with people like you around the world and learn what it felt like. So, you know, I've had stories that are like, one of my friends, Carolina, one of my dear friends who I met through podcasting, she is transitioning and she realized that she was a female at 47 years old. And she was like, I feel like I'm transitioning too late. I'm not passing enough. Like this is how I feel it. And I like also like to think of my podcast as a really safe space for people to, I'm a very safe person. Being told that is a very big, huge compliment. I do a lot for the queer community. I'm a huge, huge, strong ally. I have a lot of trans friends. And so when they feel like it's safe for them to come to me with their stuff, like that is really something I could have never imagined, but also I've done the last year has given me a lot of time to learn the right things to say, the right fights to fight, and the right way to talk to people. Like something I've been adopting more recently is asking people's pronouns and not assuming pronouns, because pronouns can be very scary. But if you're non-binary or if you're transitioning, you know, it's polite to actually ask. I asked my friend Courtney, who is trans. I said, what would you prefer? And she was like, oh, I just want you to ask me my pronouns because I'm obviously female identifying. I'm obviously female forward. But she's like, but at work, I would just prefer if people would ask me my pronouns. And I was like, girl, you're a woman through and through. I don't know what to tell you.
No, it's certainly becoming more common. I've certainly seen more people, certainly in the last 12 months, putting it in the brackets to let people know how they'd like to be addressed. And it really is very helpful.
Which is nice. And I think that's really good because, you know, gender is such a construct, which I found over time. And so is sexuality and all of that. I'm an absolute straight woman. There's no doubt in my mind, I'm a straight woman, but I have a lot of friends who are lesbians or maybe they're pansexual. I mean, just like, you know, there's like so many terms now. And so the best advice I can give is, it's just best to educate yourself. Be educated when you go into a conversation about things. So that's just something I, you know, do on my own. But that's why I'm really grateful for my podcast, because it's connected me to people that I wouldn't otherwise have talked to. And then I learned something. And I always say that there's no boring interview.
Well, I hope you continue doing the show, because I've really enjoyed listening to it.
Oh,
as well,
thank you. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to have you on. So we'll figure that out. We'll coordinate.
Absolutely. Now, wrapping up, I mentioned earlier on that Mike Valdez inspired a new question. So when Mike was here, he was very, very passionate about his Alf doll and wanting do you remember? He wanted to go back in time and get his Alf doll. So
his mom got rid of it. Yep.
That's the one. So he inspired a new question. So I now asked everybody, if you could go back to your childhood and rescue something you don't have anymore, what would you rescue?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, shoot. I mean, my parents' basement flooded, so we lost a lot of stuff. They still have all my Beanie Babies. They have closets full of Beanie Babies. I have photos of me showing off my Beanie Babies, but they're worth nothing. I want to say I had like a really cool doll there was this thing called Popples. And I don't remember if it was like an 80s series or something, but I don't know. The 80s and 90s were really, really weird. And these Popples, you could like push them into a pouch. They're like a stuffed animal. And they're really fun and bright colored, very Lisa Frank. So I think I'd rescue the Popple.
Nice. And if you could go right back to the beginning of your journey and give yourself a gift to help to get where you are now, what gift would you give yourself?
A microphone. I'm just kidding. I don't know. Actually, I think I would give myself the following statement, which be yourself. You attract more when you're authentic. And don't ever, ever, you know, be friends or be with someone who wants to change any aspect of you because you're perfect the way that you are.
And finally, where can people find out more about you, what you do, and the podcast, of course?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Bianca Woolwick. You can Google me. That's fine. But I have a podcast called Please Don't Kick Me Out. You can go to pleasedontkickmeout.com. Episodes drop every Monday. I have merch. It's pretty legit. If you want to hear more about my story or you want to, you know, learn more about how you can combat the feeling of imposter syndrome, then check it out. And new episodes drop every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific time because I am in California. Eventually going to be in Hawaii. Who knows what that looks like? And I'm at Beyond Cakes. It's a mouthful. You can just find me through the podcast. Find me there.
Fantastic. Bianca, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a delight. I appreciate it. And I hope your listeners learned something.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of You Really Shouldn't Have. Be sure to subscribe to us on your chosen podcast service to make sure you never miss another episode. You can find us on both Twitter and Instagram at Bad Gifts Pod, as well as online at badgiftspod.com.